Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced this evening. The air date of this episode today is February the 5th, 2023. This here is Black History Month, and the title of this episode is that we are still in a state of emergency. We will be discussing methods, tactics, and innovative ways of how we as people can upgrade and maintain the quality of life for ourselves. We will also discuss the current events that are affecting us as well. And this episode is for those 18 years of age and over. Okay, of course, as we do know, that one of the current events that's facing us is the tragedy there that happened in Memphis, Tennessee, with Mr. Tyree Nichols. And when does it stop? Because, you know, it's a culling on black men and what have you. And then, of course, you know, this effeminization of black men is what they, you know, keep pushing on us as well, too. So it's up to us to take care of us, okay? We are in season 7 of Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. Please cash app us, dollar sign, Shabaka Sankore, lowercase. And you can call in with your questions, comments, and concerns at 516-418-5996 and press 1 and then speak live on the air. Okay, so our co-host should be joining us shortly, Mr. Chay Nkrumah, otherwise known as Jesse Parrish, Denver candidate for mayor 2023. Okay, definitely check us out on StreamYard as well, too, with Frontline Black News and Shabaka's Black Experience Enhances, a division of Frontline Black News. Okay, as we are looking off into this case with Mr. Tyree Nichols down there in Memphis, and then another officer has been charged, a white officer, the one who did the actual tasing of Mr. Nichols. These officers, as we stated before, dealing with the subject matter, had never had told this man what he was under arrest for. They just yanked him out the car. And this here was definitely something personal. And we have other information, you know, that has came across that's unconfirmed, that Mr. Tyree Nichols was seeing one of the ex-girlfriends of one of these police officers that murdered him. Okay, they have been arrested. Okay, so right-wing media, Fox News and what have you, Gottlieb, Gene Piero, other asshole over there, I think his name was Tucker Carlson or whatever what that fool's name is. They're trying to say that this was not a racial situation, which in fact it was something called institutional racism. Just like when you had the field Negro and you had the house Negro. The field Negro will go tell the house Negro, hey man, let's separate. Let's get away from the evil cruel master. And the house Negro would sit up there and say, man, you crazy. What's better than what we got right here? Okay, so I think psychologists call this here the Stockholm Syndrome or whatever other type of syndrome and whatnot, where the captor identified with his captor, such as your contemporary black police officer. But when he goes out here and commits this abuse against his own people, you know, his slave master or his white counterparts look at him with a sense of approval, but he does not recognize the fact or fails to recognize the fact that he is just as despised and hated by the slave master as the individual, you know, brother who he had just abused. Okay. Such as on a plantation system with the buck breaking syndrome. Okay. Also, too, we have appeared on other podcasts. And there's this guy by the name of Pianchi and Sarge. And I was on another podcast with him yesterday. And both of these individuals are going to state that they are proud of the bloodline from the slave trading pedophiles, you know, that, you know, infested, quote unquote, their lineage. Then they try to bring up Frederick Douglass as well, too. So we know what Frederick Douglass did with the slave master that violated his mother. He beat him to a pulp, you know, worked on him for about a couple of hours. And then, of course, you know, he had to get up out of Maryland. And then, of course, as we know, Frederick Douglass, you know, a sailor, a newspaper journalist, and what have you, an abolitionist, and things of this nature right here. So I failed to see, well, you know, having your lineage tainted, you know, it's a good thing. You know, I failed to see that. But give us a call here at 516-418-5996. And what we're going to do here is that we're going to play a clip, you know, from Malcolm X. And you know, give us a call here and give us some feedback on this. All right.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food, but he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, "We got a good house here," the house Negro said, "Yeah, we got a good house here." Whenever the master said "we," he said "we." That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, "What's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick." He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, "Let's run away, let's escape, let's separate," that house Negro would look at you and say, "Man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this?" That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, "I'm the only Negro out here."
"I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro." And if someone come to you right now and say, "Let's separate," you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. "What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa." That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say, our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts. Our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check, the same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts pulling. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw. And you don't know what's happening because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street. When he gonna want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back, to keep you from fighting back, he get these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me that just like Novocaine, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. As Reverend Cleve pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. Because nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send them to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye. and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf, and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teaches don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a little education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up. Publicize him. Make him a celebrity. And then he becomes a spokesman for Negro and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is the method that the white man uses, how the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They're not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble. Plus, it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson. In Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders began to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King, accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere and then making the NAACP get him out of jail and spend a lot of money, and then he accused King and Corps of raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in documented evidence in the newspaper. Roy started attacking King, and King started attacking Roy, and Farmer started attacking both of them. And as these Negroes of national stature begin to attack each other, they begin to lose their control of the Negro masses. And Negroes was out there in the streets. They was talking about, we're going to march on Washington. By the way, and right at that time, Birmingham had exploded, and the Negroes in Birmingham, remember, they also exploded. They began to stab the crackers in the back and bust them upside the head. Yes, they did. That's when Kennedy sent in the troops down in Birmingham. So, and right after that, Kennedy got on the television and said, this is a moral issue. That's when he said he's going to put out a civil rights bill. And when he mentioned civil rights bill and the Southern crackers start talking about they were going to boycott it or filibuster it, then the Negroes start talking about what? We're going to march on Washington, march on the Senate, march on the White House, march on the Congress and tie it up, bring it to a halt. Don't let the government proceed. They even said they were going to go out to the airport and lay down on the runway and don't let no airplanes land. I'm telling you what they said. That was revolution. That was revolution. That was the Black Revolution. It was the grassroots out there in the street. Scared the white man to death. Scared the white power structure in Washington, D.C. to death. I was there. When they found out that this black steamroller was going to come down on the Capitol, they called in Wilkins. They called in Randolph. They called in these national Negro leaders that you respect. And told them, call it off. Kennedy said, look, y'all letting this thing go too far. And old Tom said, boss, I can't stop it because I didn't start it. I'm telling you what they said. They said, I'm not even in it, much less at the head of it. They said, these Negroes are doing things on their own. They're running ahead of us. And that old shrewd fox, he said, well, if you all aren't in it, I'll put you in it. I'll put you at the head of it. I'll endorse it. I'll welcome it. I'll help it. I'll join it. A matter of hours went by. They had a meeting at the Carlisle Hotel in New York City.
This one is two songs by Miriam Mama Makeba. The first one is called Kilimanjaro. So I'll play the first one on the Ohadi, which is this beautiful kasapo, and then we move on to the second one where we have the rhythm section chosen on the mambo.
Close down. foreparents to be made useful to the rulers of this society. They were robbed of their language, culture, religion, their knowledge of self, and their knowledge of their God, Allah. This process rendered them defenseless, so that even after their release from physical bondage, they were unable to resist those who would take advantage of their condition.
Because we have stood up for nonviolence with all of our hearts, and those who will make this peaceful revolution impossible will make a violent revolution inevitable.
Many great leaders from different backgrounds and with different ideologies rose from the ranks of blacks in America hoping to better the condition of their people. Among these leaders was the most honorable Elijah Muhammad.
The so-called American Negroes have to be completely re-educated. They have to be completely made over again. And the condition that he is now in, he's not fit for self. And Islam gives him that qualification that he can feel proud and does not feel ashamed.
Greetings to you. I am Elijah Muhammad.
It is Islam that you must have today. Without Islam, you cannot see the hereafter. The Holy Quran plainly teaches us that if we come upon the resurrection day with a religion other than Islam, Allah will not accept it. He accepts only Islam. Islam is the true religion of Almighty God, Allah, and his prophets. The religion, its name is called in the Arab language, but the word means only entire submission to the will of God. So it's up to you and me to submit to God and be saved, protected from the evil that is coming upon this world.
And our beautiful brother, the Mau Mau, who were patriotic soldiers fighting in defense of Kenya, their homeland, when the white man would go to them with his pole and say, "You belong to the Mau Mau?" They said, "I ain't never heard of the Mau Mau." You know, the white man is so naive. He actually expected that African to tell him that he was one. And the one who so faithfully told Boss, "I never heard of him, Boss," he got Boss's head when Boss went to bed. And so I tell him the same thing here in America. When he run around asking black people, "Are you a Muslim?" Our people say, "I never heard of them, boss." And that's what he wants to hear. Tell him just what he wants to hear. "I never heard of them, boss." Rock him to sleep. Send him to bed. Now, if I was Cassius Clay, I'd make that rhyme out. But I'm not Brother Cassius. So I think I'll let it stop right there.
This afternoon, we want to talk about the ballot or the bullet. The ballot or the bullet explains itself. But before we get into it, since this is the year of the ballot or the bullet, I would like to clarify some things that refer to me personally concerning my own personal position. I'm still a Muslim. That is, my religion is still Islam. My religion.
Good evening. We're back. We just took an intermission there. Is that there, you, Brother Che?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay, so, you know, our subject tonight is that we're still in a state of emergency. You know, we're discussing methods, tactics, and innovative ways of how we as the people can upgrade and maintain the quality of life for ourselves. We'll also discuss the current events, you know, that are affecting us as well. And this episode is for those 18 years of age and older, and also two ladies and gentlemen as our co-host and co-producer, Brother Chan Krumah, otherwise known as Jesse Paris. He's running for mayor of Denver, Colorado for 2023. It's very, very imperative that we get this man elected. He's doing a grassroots campaign. He is being systematically ostracized in the city of Denver because of the changes that he wants to make. Okay, it's because, you know, he's got such opposition as a hypocrite by the name of Jeff Fart there, who's doing a, you know, trying to throw a monkey wrench off in his brother's works and what have you. But Brother Che, you know, he still prevails. Brother Che, he gets out there and helps the homeless, you know, homeless advocate. He also do feeds the senior citizens every Sunday up there, you know, at Senior Citizen Center, I believe. And I'll let Brother Che get more details on that. Brother Che.
Yes, good evening. Everything Shabaka said and then some. I'm the only black first candidate in this race. I'm the only one that's going to do anything specific for black people. And they are ostracizing me because as long as you said, yeah, so it's imperative, black family, that y'all vote for me if you live in Denver. I'm already being cleansed and gentrified out of our communities, and I'm the only one that's running that has experiences with being unhoused. I have a whole plan on how to address our unhoused neighbor situation. That's my term, by the way. So if you hear anybody talking about unhoused neighbors, just know they got it from me. And it's imperative, black family. We're only 10% of the city. And if things continue the way that they are, we'll only be 5% of the city. Or 4% of the city. Majority of our black population has moved to Aurora and surrounding areas because Denver has become the mile high income city. You have to have mile high income to afford to live here. So under the Paris administration, we would actually have a city that had a heart and a city that was actually affordable. So support Team Paris for Denver Mayor. Go to www.jessedenvermayor.com. Support the campaign. It's imperative, black family.
Yes, sir, it is.
That's all I got.
And then hopefully this is.
I'm outside, Shabaka, so I'm going to mute so you don't get the background noise.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, but here at the same token, folks, you see, you know, this is why, you know, in this day and age, is that we got to become self-sufficient, okay, because that's economically, politically, healthcare wise, you know, insurance wise, agricultural wise, as well too, because on the Frontline Black News earlier today, which I'm a contributor to, and Shabaki's Black Experience Enhanced is part of Frontline Black News. But, you know, there's a story that there are some landowners there in Colorado where there are other groups going out there trying to intimidate them and trying to get them up off the land, and they're going up there disrespecting their land. And this is becoming a trend here in these contemporary times, you know, about the police kill us, and just like the gentleman who was murdered by the Huntington Park Police Department in Los Angeles County. The man had no legs, and they allegedly said that he threw a knife at him, and that that they, quote, were in fear of their lives. Okay, all what that was, ladies and gentlemen, you know, off the information that I've got so far, is nothing more with these individuals, you know, having this compulsion to kill because they hide behind a badge. You see what I mean? And actually, that there is not a public servant, that there is a coward. You know, you're going to shoot this man, you know, who has no legs. And what harm could he do to you having no legs? You see, very, very little. And then it's a culling of black men, is that we have stated before, and this is why we are still in a state of emergency, because when you heard Malcolm X speak, you know, earlier, you know, from his clips, you know, from history and whatnot, that there was over 60 years ago. So it was just as bad as it was 60 years ago. So, but what is happening is that they have divided the black community so much. The media, through Hollywood, various other ways, you know, these public figures that they prop up, you know, that spread all this divisiveness against us. They come with this illusion of inclusion. Okay, and Dr. Umar Johnson was talking about a couple of weeks ago that I saw on the live feed with him. So ladies and gentlemen, now please give us a call, 516-418-5996. And we're still waiting on you Biden supporters to give us a call here at the same number of 516-418-5996, okay? And so far we had one person, you know, that stated that they had voted for Biden and that they were very, very sorry that they did. Okay. Then, of course, Al Sharpton. Yeah, Al Sharpton, you're a fraud. You sit up there, you grandstand, you know, at people's misery, and you up here at Mr. Nichols' funeral, and members of the George Floyd family were there too, and all their grief. You sitting up here talking about the books that you sell and the tapes that you got for sale. Now, Sharpton, I mean, yeah, and I'm making it plain to you, Al Sharpton, you're a punk, okay? It's what you are. You know, you go wherever the flow goes. You go over here with this LGBT shit, you know what I mean? You get up here, grandstand, just like Jesse Jackson. You know, you guys lost your effectiveness, man, because all you guys do is sit up and regurgitate the same prepackaged bullshit of what you do and what you clowns are about. And I'm very, very disappointed. Now, I'm sure that there are those out there that says, okay, well, what makes you, you know, so qualified, you know, to talk on this? What makes me so formed by what I live through? And I see our chat room, you know, is open. So therefore, if anybody there, you know, wants to write us a message or what have you, you know, on the chat, feel free to do so. Yeah, Pianchi, you're welcome to call in, man. You know, we'll sit up there and laugh at your ignorance, man, because you're a joke, Pianchi. And me personally, I think you're a buster, so I'm making it plain, too. Okay, and then also, too, have your boy Sarge call in, and you guys can come up here in a respectful manner and talk about your hatred of yourselves, but you're not going to sell us that garbage of integration right here on this platform, but I love it. You know, we you know, we'll let you talk, you know, so therefore, so definitely check out our chat room, folks, you know, it's Black Experience Enhanced. And then also, too, is that we want to get some information, if we can, from some of our scholars out there, is that what we could do, you know, to upgrade the quality of the education for ourselves, you know, in lieu of sending our children to these public indoctrination centers. Is because this is where they get dumbed down. This is where they lose, you know, their sense of themselves. This is where, you know, they are taught to hate themselves in a subliminal way. Then there was one individual who showed that I was on, I believe his name is Mr. Amos, and I forgot the name of the brother's show, but I told him about ours, and he's welcome to call in. And what have you, and then of course, Sarge, you've been on here before with us, and you know how you're going to be treated, you and Bianchi, because you guys are not coming on this platform raising your voice and ain't dictating nothing, okay? And we're just making it plain. So until, you know, Brother Che gets back, okay, what we're going to do here is we've got some audio in the meantime, we're going to, you know, let everybody check out a little bit. And in our chat room is open. They did decide that they let it work today. So we're going to play Ship Ahoy here by the OJs that they made back in 1973. And just listen to the lyrics of the song.
Oh, I'm so tired, and I know. Tennessee. We're dead. Riding on the way.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so that's
yeah, brother, check. Yes, sir. Go ahead, brother, check.
I was just saying that's Chip Ahoy by the OJs. It chronicles our our transatlantic slave trade to these here Americas, and we're still involved in it, Black family, and that's just changed with the year.
Yes, sir. You know, without a doubt. And then also, too, Brother Che, you know, we're getting some BS here, you know, over the chat room is open right here. I think we're going to have Truth Sharks talk in. And I believe this is the allied heir to Sarge and Pianchi and what have you. So he says, give him a moment. So, you know, we're definitely going to give him a moment. And then I got a friend's request, believe it or not, from Dr. Boyce Watkins. And I okay, but I don't know if it's authentic or not. I hope it is, Dr. Watkins. And if you're out there listening, sir, thank you for the request. You know, keep check with me in the chat room just to make sure it's you, and I'll be more than happy to have you as a friend. And also, too, Doctor, we would like to have you on. Now, seriously, on Blog Talk, that I'm now disconnected from the chat room. Here they go. Don't you just love it, Brother Chad? Don't you just love it? Oh, Chad. Yeah. So we don't know if this is Blog Talk themselves doing this or not, man. You know what I'm saying? And so I guess Truth Sharks, you know, had deleted everything, or what it appears to be Sharks, you know. But however, if he calls in, he's more than welcome. And that there was the, yeah, that was the name of the brother who was the host of the podcast that I was on with yesterday. And, you know, Pianchi and him and what have you, you know. So I give True Sharks, you know, his respect and what have you, at least with him and I. We disagree agreeably, you know, but and I'm going to send him, you know, an invite right here if he decides to work, and I see, you know, that it's not. Oh, boy, what they do to us right here, ladies and gentlemen right here, what they do to us, you know, of how they just... You know, just, hey, that's there, you know, to the point, were, you know, they sabotage us and what have you. So we're going back, you know, to our episode info right here on it. But what it is, though, folks, we're still in a state of emergency, particularly on the educational system and on the legal system. Okay, it's because when we look at these cases here with George Floyd and what happened with Mr. Tyrese Nichols, I mean, this was murder. These are state-sanctioned homicides. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And there's no other way around it, you know? And I've been, and being an old bird myself, I've been around the block a couple of times. You know, they're pissing on our heads, telling us when it's rain. You know, they're defecating on us, telling us that it is snow. You see, and quite naturally, of course, you know, this social media, you know, they window dress saying that you got the right to the freedom of speech. And then when you go against the popular version of what they don't do, then all of a sudden you're getting low numbers on your posts on Facebook. I mean, just like on our like page of Shabaka's Black Expanse Enhanced, we got, what is that there, Brother Chair? We got 1,500 followers up on there, man. And then when we post our material up there on our like page for Facebook, we're only getting 2 or 3 people who read it. And, of course, that is an insult to our intelligence. Okay, the same thing with the Tweety Bird. Yeah, and like I said, I've been there on the corner of 10th and Market in San Francisco, California, Tweety Bird. I went and cussed you out at your front door. The same thing with you, Academy Awards. I went there on the corner of Hollywood Boulevard and Highland Avenue, and I went and cussed you guys out. I put my disclaimers up there because you clowns are not going to sue me for what little that I got left, okay? But Hollywood, you're full of shit, okay? And however, though, I am happy to say I saw a little bit of the movie Wakanda Forever last night, you know, a little bit of the movie. And then, of course, as we do know that Chadwick Boseman had passed away, you know, over a year ago, I would imagine, when they were in pre-production of Black Panther 2. And then Ryan Coogler, who is an independent filmmaker out of Oakland, California, who brought you to Bell Station about the murder of Oscar Grant. And we did do a YouTube video around that time from the actual platform at the Food Bell Station of where Mr. Grant was murdered. And Johannes Mercerly, the one that who had murdered him, he was only convicted, I think, of murder too. They gave him the minimum amount of time on it. And Johannes Mercerly, who was there, Rapid Transit. Yeah, that was what year?
That was the same year Kamala Harris was the attorney general and all the second. No, she was the district attorney of Alameda County.
She was an assistant district attorney of Alameda County. Then she became the district attorney of San Francisco County. And quite obviously, San Francisco only has one city in its county by the same name. And this is during the time of the murder of Mario Woods, who was only 5'7", weighing 140 pounds, about the same weight class as Tyree Nichols. And the San Francisco Police Department, 5 officers had gotten a half circle, guns drawn, and it was quite what their intent was. And then they put 25 bullets in him. And and one thing about the San Francisco Police Department that I've noticed about them, that when they're committing misconduct, they put a siren on, you know, so they cannot be recorded, you see. So that shows to me. And let me know, Brother Che, because you're more educated in law and them, wouldn't that prove intent?
It would prove foul play.
Yeah. But I mean, if they turn on the siren, and you know, you can, and to drown out any audio, knowing that the general public is filming, okay, they get in a half circle so they don't get each caught up in each other's crossfire. And this dude only has a knife. I could see, man, if they took their nightsticks out and went upside his head. I could see, man, if they tased him, but they put 25 bullets in him. So what this is that this is a culling of black males. And then also, too, what they did with Breonna Taylor, Sandra Bland, and what have you. You know, it's pretty much is that they're making it known that here in the United States, we don't mind killing you and then to rub your nose in it as men. We're going to kill your wives and your daughters as well, too, like with Breonna Taylor. I mean, she's in bed, you know, with her husband or common law husband or what have you. You know, the door gets broken into without nobody knocking. So the man grabs, you know, his weapon to defend his household, to defend, you know, his woman, which any man would do, okay? But yet, though, they want to go on here and prosecute this man, and I believe that the gentleman did beat the rap, okay? And then I think that went on in a great state of, what state was that, I think? Was that Indiana? Kentucky. Yeah, Kentucky. I knew it was somewhere in the South, and then they had outlawed no-knock warrant. And from what I understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that no-knock warrants are illegal in their own right, you see. But however, you know, you get this syndrome, okay, you know, about people, you know, who've been oppressed, you know, who've been so used to being oppressed, you see, that they will continue, you know, just like a loved one that told me, you got to make this shit stop. They say, when somebody's abusing you or taking advantage of you or trying to disrespect you, see, you got to make it stop, okay? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, Johnny Cochran had passed on. Now, Ben Crump, you know, is probably an ambulance chaser. But however, though, the case of Tyree Nichols, you know, and Mr. Crump, you know, since Johnny Cochran is no longer alive, you know, is the man to do the job to get him played. With Crump bumming on Al Sharpton. So Al Sharpton, go to San Francisco, man. Take your rainbow flag with you, man, and your bananas and what have you. You're a joke. You're an opportunity. And as it was explained on Frontline Black News last night, where Brother Che had brought a gentleman on and presented his content, and that content creator asked the question, just look at Al Sharpton. He's talking about all the books he's got for sale. He's talking about all the tapes that he's got for sale and things of this nature right there. To be about Tyree Nichols, I mean, how dare him? Yes, sir, go ahead, Brother Che.
You're right. How dare he? Like, it's supposed to be a funeral, not a, it's not a damn political rally. They turned that into a damn blue, no matter who, political rally.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, of course, when you see Tyrese's mother, how shaken up that she is, and his stepfather, you know, being there with his mom, you see. And then Kamala Harris, ma'am, please resign as the vice president, because what you did yesterday, ma'am, was no different. Just like how you neglected the family of Mr. Mario Woods when you were the district attorney of San Francisco County. Also, too, ma'am, how you neglected the family of Ezell Ford, who was murdered by the Los Angeles Police Department, I believe, when you were the attorney general. The Newton Division of the LAPD, they had Mr. Ford handcuffed. They had him face down. Then you could hear on the camera, if the lap dogs didn't destroy the film, of the officer, I would imagine, telling the rookie officer, just go up there and kill him. So it looked like some type of initiation for him, you know, to be on the LAPD. And then just like the LA County Sheriff's Department, where you had a gang of Latino deputies who was going out here killing black people out there in the Compton area, out there by the Jordan Downs and over there by the Kingsview Medical Center, you see. So, I mean, we're not safe here. Okay, so now for all you ass scratchers and yassa bosses that says, well, if you don't like America, then I'll get up out of here. As soon as you kick out the reparations money, man, I'm on my way. Also, too, we want to give a shout out there to Black Power Radio, who will be coming on in the next hour with Brother Dynamite Lightning. You know, we're definitely going to be calling in on them, you know, and they If they're within earshot of us, they're more than welcome to give us a call in. And then I think I did send them an instant message and ask them if it was possible to combine the two platforms today. Yes, sir.
Excuse me. Okay.
Okay. And, you know, and that. You was what?
I was just agreeing with you.
Oh, yes, sir. And then also, too, in the state of California, from what I understand, in the first week of March, roughly in about 30 days, they're going to be having hearings in Sacramento at the state capitol, which is off the Capitol Mall. And you cannot miss it. It's because as you travel on Interstate 5, you're going to see a small version of the Golden Gate Bridge. It's a little golden bridge, which is right behind Old Town Sacramento. And it will take you straight there to the state capitol. And what you do is you get off on it, get on the Capitol Mall. That is if you're coming from the south. And then just make a right turn and head east. And you cannot help but see the California state capitol there. And California is similar to the state capitol in Denver. And except the difference is the state capitol in Denver, I believe, is a grayish color. But the state capitol of California is white, and they both got gold on top of them. So you cannot miss it. So therefore, also to be advised, folks, you know, California does not recognize the Second Amendment. Okay, do not have any firearms on your possession, and do not have any firearms, I'm sorry, on your person, because you will do 5 years in the state of California, because, you know, they got some charge up there where you're in possession of a firearm and what have you, and they believe in disarming the public in California. And for obvious historical reasons, and if anybody's familiar with Frontline Black News, or Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, okay, or New Black Power Radio, you would understand why they don't allow you to possess a firearm in the state of California. It's because there was a certain crew, you know, that exercised their Second Amendment right there in the late 1960s, and then the governor of California at that time, I'm not going to mention his name, but signed the Mulfer Act into law, which is the Gun Control Act of 1968. Also, too, this former governor of California wind up becoming your 40th president of the United States. And so there's no need to say his name and whatnot. And then also, too, to prove the state of emergency even more so, is these black political candidates that you're having and then these black Congress personnel that you're having that are not standing up making a demand to be something done about this problem. Okay, it's because Malcolm X is dead. Yes, sir.
Boyce Walker sent me a request too.
Okay, who's Dr. Boyce Watkins sent you a friend's request also?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to treat that there as fake, okay? And the reason being because I tried to communicate with him and he didn't get back with us. But if he instant messages me and calls in the show and then Boyce, you know what I'm saying? And if it really is Dr. Boyce Watkins, we'll be happy to have him. I respect Dr. Boyce Watkins. You know, man has a lot of knowledge and whatnot. But however, you know, as we know, and the information that we got in the last couple of years, a lot of these profiles on Facebook have been hijacked and they have been manipulated. So I don't know what you're doing over there in Menlo Park, Zuckerberg, but we're on to you. Okay, you and Instagram, we're on to you, Zuckerberg, okay? It's because you guys don't like the truth that we talk. You don't like our like-mindedness of those, you know, who think that we do, like the way that we do. But guess what? We're going to keep thinking this way. It's because we have recognized, man, of what it is. there's a bounty, there's an extermination plot to exterminate black men, okay? And one of your main perpetrators of this is Hollywood. Why do you think they always showing you commercials of white men with black women? And check out our episode that we did a few years back. I think he was on that one there too, Brother Check, called Hollywood Feminization of the Black Male. Yes, sir. Yeah. Okay. So you could pull that up there in our archives. And I believe at that time they had made a movie that won Academy Award called Fences about the homosexual relationship between two black men, I believe, sir.
Oh, you're thinking of Moonlight.
Yeah, Moonlight or something like that. Yeah. And in the episode that we did around that time, I believe, which was in 2017, you know, 5 years ago, because we're in season 7. And it's called Hollywood, the Feminization of the Black Male. You could Google that episode. Also, to Google our past episode, L.A., 30 years later, that we made there in 2022, April 29th. And as we do know, that the rebellion that it was commonly referred to, April 29th, 1992, you know, of course, you know what happened with Rodney King. Then there was another case of where the truck driver, Reginald Denny, was assaulted. And then they had the trial of the LA 10 plus down there. And from what I understand is that the truck driver that came through the intersection, he was yelling a bunch of obscenities to the protesters and saying such things as that you guys deserved what you got. Rodney King deserved to get what he did, but that there's time confirmed.
And beat down.
Okay, you got what now?
Then he get pulled off the truck and get beat down.
Yeah, Reginald Denny was his name. Yes. And then of course, so you know, he was hitting the head with a brick and whatnot. And then, of course, you know, L.A. went up in flames, you know, during the rebellion of what it was commonly referred to. And what sparked this here, thank white America once again, after verdict was read, they had some of the jurors who were out of Ventura County, by the way, not Los Angeles County, but what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They gave them a change of venue to Ventura County, which it has very, very few blacks there, and it's an affluent white community of Simi Valley, and then they in turn it came on public media there on the radio over the television saying that Rodney King got what he deserved. And then of course you saw the aftermath of that in 1992. Then President George Bush Sr., not Baby Bush, but Bush Sr., had came on, you know, the major television networks talking about the situation in Los Angeles. He stated that it is bad, that it's going to stop, that he, that the governor of California at the time was sending in a National Guard, and Bush Sr. said that he was sending in the regular army, of which he did. And then, but however, what Bush Sr. said is that he immediately ordered Stacey Coons, Timothy Wynn, Lawrence Powell, and Theodore Bracino to be charged in federal court. Three of them fell, except for Ted Bracino. Ted Bracino was not convicted in the state courts. None of them were convicted in the state courts. Neither was Ted Bracino convicted in the federal courts. But, however, Stacey Coons was convicted, Lawrence Powell was convicted, and Timothy Wynn was convicted. And then this is over 31 years ago, folks, okay? So now the culling starts, you know, at the turn of the 21st century. You know, Trayvon Martin. And what is it, Brother Che, that Trayvon would have been 28 years old today?
Trayvon Martin would have been 28 years old today.
Yes, sir. Okay. And then, of course, you know, George Zimmerman, you know, he was charged, but he beat the crime. George Zimmerman. had, had claimed that in Florida stand your ground law, and, you know, he had wanted to be Mr. Rent-A-Cop. And Mr. Martin, you know, was going in his housing complex to visit, you know, one of his parents. I think he was going to visit his father, okay? And then they said that Zimmerman said that Trayvon, you know, had a weapon on him. It turned out to be a bag of Skittles in his pocket. And then Zimmerman, you know, had used, I believe, a 44 Magnum, if not a 357 Magnum, to shoot and kill Trayvon Martin. So quite naturally, of course, our hearts go out to their family, you know, on that as well, too. And particularly the fact that the young man would have been 28 years old today. So he didn't even get to live his life as a full grown
adult. His mom has the same mind, though. His mom, my mom and his mom have the same name.
Wow.
Sabrina.
Okay. So you see, black family apathy here touches us one way or another when any of these police murders go down.
And Shabaka.
Give me anything. Yes.
The death of Trayvon Martin is what activated me into the social activism. Community activism.
Oh,
space.
Yes, sir.
I had enough.
Yes, sir.
That was the straw that broke the camel's back for me.
Oh, absolutely. And this is great. And that's one of the reasons, brother, of what I do, of what I do. You see what I'm saying? It's because, you know, I get tired of when I go out on the street driving, you know, if I'm going to get stopped by one of these race officers. I get tired of when my loved ones go out there on the street and traveling. Am I going to get a call, well, you know, this is what happened, you know, to the loved one, you see what I'm saying, and what have you. Okay, so then, of course, you have those who do what the police tell them, you know, who follow police orders, and then they're still murdered. And then you and Brother Che, didn't you and I do some research, man, a couple of years back? In fact, I'm sure we did with the FBI. It came out and stated that a lot of white supremacists are joining these law enforcement agencies.
Yeah, the FBI.
Yes, sir. So the FBI says, you know, that this is happening. But at the same token, they're not coming up with no solutions, you know, to have or to do anything about it. You know, they're just trying to sweep it up under the rug. You see, so it goes to show that they don't have no regard for us, you know, as human. You know, we look upon as subhuman. You see what I mean? You know, we really are. You see? And I mean, man, and it's ridiculous. You know, it's ridiculous. And then the sad part about it is because I'm getting some telemetry here in the chat room, and I'm trying to make something happen here. And let's see here. We got it. Okay, now this thing don't want to operate. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't want to operate, people. It does not want to operate. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Here we got some stuff right here. You know, half-ass like. You see what they do to us? You see what they do to us, folks? Yeah. You see what they do to us? You know. And once again, you know, now they're giving me. Oh, boy. It's a conspiracy, man. We got Sarge right here, and we got True Sharks right here, and I'm trying to, you know, let them come on in. And if you guys hear us, you know the number, man. Give us a call, man, 516-418-5996, if you dare, because guess what? Me and Brother Che is in control of this platform, and you know how we get out? You know, ask Bianca. Yes, sir.
I was just agreeing with you. I said, yep.
No, yeah. And so I'm trying to invite them in here. Okay, so they threw a monkey wrench in our works on us here, Brother Che. Yeah, Blog Talk did that to us, man. Yeah, they throw a monkey wrench in our works, man. They sure did. Mm-hmm. Well, if you guys is up there listening, man, y'all know the number to call in, okay? Now, I'm going to try something here, okay? And I can't, okay? And, you know, I'm trying to go to the part to tell them where to call in as, man, but it's stuck on stupid.
I'm in the central.
Okay. All right. Okay, so Brother Chay, go there to, you know, where it says the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and allegedly we're supposed to be having a message from Dr. Boyce Watkins. Have you bought my classes before? Hope you're doing well.
There's a number 111. Yeah. Somebody just called in.
Oh, okay. All righty. Yeah, all I got to do is press one. Okay, now, what I'm looking at, and no disrespect to you, Dr. Boyce Watkins, if this is you, that what I'm looking at, I'd appreciate, you know, your friendship, but I can tell, yeah, you got the same message, Brother Che. Okay, so this is bullshit. No disrespect to Dr. Watkins, yeah. Just letting Dr. Watkins know. And let me guess, Brother Che, are you getting this thing about cryptocurrency investment from Dr. Boyce Watkins?
Not yet.
Yeah, but that's what I got. You know, yeah. Okay, and so I'm going to respond back to this, and I'm letting it know it's on the air. I am sure that this is not Dr. Watkins, okay? And I'm saying it on the air to whoever you are, man. Or, you know, you may go take a flying fuck through a rolling donut. Excuse my language. But however, Dr. Watkins, if it is you, they did what now?
They pressed the one.
Oh, okay. Oh, this individual is pressing one. Okay. All right. Oh, good evening there to you. You're calling from from a block number, and you want to talk, so you can talk. So how you doing?
Good evening, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Since you extended the invitation, I decided to accept it. Sarge here, and I'm definitely not Dr. Boyce Watkins.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, of course not, Sarge. Now, keep in mind, Sarge, now let me explain something to you, Sarge. You're inside an RBG house tonight, Sarge, and I'm not going to put up with the BS, but you are more than welcome to, you know, to state how you feel. Now, Sarge, you and I, and also, too, please call your boy Pianchi to call in, you know what I'm saying, you know, and let Pianchi know that we won't kick him out this time as long as he's being respectful. Now, Sarge, on the truth, Sarge, podcast that we was on yesterday, you say that you are proud to have the genes of the rape and slave trading pedophiles off the plantation system who were British, and you said that you got British in you, and you got lineage to the Cameroon and Nigeria and all this old good stuff, and you said that you are proud of the rape and slave trading pedophile that violated your bloodline. Am I correct in that assessment, sir?
No, you're absolutely incorrect. I'll tell you what I said, and I want to make sure we're as clear as to what I said. I am not proud to have any of my ancestors' genetic structure because it was something I had absolutely nothing to do with. It's something that happened whether I would have wanted it or not. I acknowledge it. It is not the same as celebrating it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All righty. Okay, Sarge. Okay. Now you and I have got a different opinion on it.
I mean, none of my genetic ancestors can I say I'm proud of him. I'm only proud of the things that I do. How can I be proud of things that I had utterly no control over?
Okay. Now here's
one
for you, Sarge.
I'll tell you one thing. I'm grateful for it because without it, I would not exist.
Okay. Well, that there is up for debate, Sarge, which I was trying to tell you guys that. Now, how do you know if that did not happen, that Sarge would not exist?
All right, now let's be logical about this for a minute, not emotional. Just analyze this logically, because we do have an understanding of science and genetic inheritance. In order for me to exist today, I cannot exist if any one of my direct ancestors are cut out of my ancestral line. I cannot exist. I need every one of their genes. in order to be here. So do you. We all do.
No, I'm not going to say that. I don't agree with that, sir.
I'm grateful for them. It doesn't mean I'm necessarily grateful for every form of the thousands of conceptions that led to me was created. I'm grateful for the fact that it took them to create the being that I am, the physical, corporeal being that is Sarge.
Okay. Brother Che, what do you have to say in regards to that?
Sarge, do you think that you've been here before?
No, I don't know whether I could or not. It's possible. I don't eliminate the possibility of reincarnation, but I have no scientific basis on which to base it, so I don't. No, I don't know whether I am. It's possible. Maybe I was. Maybe I wasn't. I'm kind of agnostic on the matter.
Okay. You're agnostic.
All right. Okay, Sarge. Okay, yeah, you know, man, you're entitled to your opinion, and you know, we respect you.
I mean, do you believe in reincarnation?
You know.
Do you think you were here before?
Okay, well, see, Sarge, that I don't know. Yeah, you see, me personally, there's 50% of me that says yeah, it's possible, then 50% of me says no, it's not possible. And also too, yeah, we're gonna just change the subject too. We got this fake Dr. Boyce Watkins is saying, why are you saying that? And the reason why we are saying that because we respect Dr. Boyce Watkins, number one. And number two is I don't think Dr. Boyce Watkins. Yeah, you got the same one too, Brother Chase. Okay.
I asked him, is this the real Dr. Boyce Watkins? And he said, yes, brother. That peace and blessings be upon you and your family.
Yeah, well, and what I got right here, he's talking about something about, you know, investing in cryptocurrency. Okay, so that's what's giving me a flag on that. Okay, so we'll get back with this particular individual when we get back to him. But we got Sarge right here. And Sarge,
but
please,
I would like to believe
ahead,
in reincarnation. I think reincarnation is a very romantic notion. I'd love to think I've been here in another guise, another form, or another life. I wish it was true sometimes.
Okay, Sarge. Okay, now let me ask you this here, Sarge, you know, just changing the subject briefly a little bit. As you do know that Trayvon Martin would have been 28 years old today. Are you aware of that fact, sir?
Yes, and I made a couple comments in the chat room about that issue.
Okay. Now, how do you feel about George Zimmerman? And correct me if I'm wrong. Now, keep in mind, Sarge, I don't have my notes in front of me. I'm going from memory, what's left of it. Okay, George Zimmerman, you know, he had wanted to be, you know, Paul Blart Mall Cop, except in the apartment complex, okay? Mr. Martin, and then 17 years of age, had a hoodie on. He was going to visit his parents, and I believe he was either going from his father's house to his mother's house or to his father's house. I know he was traveling from one parent to see another parent. Now, Mr. Zimmerman, who was not a law enforcement official, and I do not believe that Mr. Zimmerman, what was he, Brother Che?
He was
some small cop. Yeah, Paul Blart type of shit. Okay, all right. And so then he goes up there and approaches Mr. Martin. And keep in mind that Zimmerman has a 44 Magnum. Okay, and then all of us do know that when you have a Magnum firearm, you know, you shoot somebody with that, you're going to kill them. Okay, it's designed to remove something. Okay, now. George Zimmerman, you know, he does not have a power of attorney. I'm sorry. He does not have police powers, you know, or arresting powers. But however, I'm not familiar with the laws of the state of Florida of how that goes. The only thing I know is I visited the state of Florida one time, and with Governor DeSantis taking his stand, man, on what he's doing with critical race theory, I have a good mind to go down there and have all those businesses where I spent my money at that contributed, you know, indirectly to Florida's revenue to get my money back. And Governor DeSantis, you don't ever have to worry about me setting foot in your state again because what you're doing is mad. But we got Sarge here, keeping it at hand. Now, do you think, Sarge, that George Zimmerman was justified in killing Trayvon Martin?
All right, well, first of all, you asked the question. I definitely have to answer it because I definitely have an opinion about it. I studied this case at great, great, great length. I debated made it with the homicide, that former homicide detective of the Washington, Washington, D.C. Police Department, Wendell Watkins. Mm-hmm. Me and him had a debate. Mm-hmm. He believed that the shooting was not justified at the beginning of our debate. By the time it was over, he was reluctantly forced to admit that George Zimmerman was, in fact, legally justified in killing Trayvon Martin. Now, I do believe, based on the evidence, now, I don't know, look, it's possible he may have murdered Trayvon Martin. I mean, I cannot know. But based on all of the evidence, forensic evidence, the autopsy, the behavior and the phone call he had with a witness in the case, a woman named Diamond Eugene, who, in fact, was not the witness that was on the, that Doc Benjamin Crump put on the stand. Rachel Chantel was not the one woman that was on the phone with Trayvon Martin that night, but we do have the records of the phone call based upon the fact that Trayvon Martin was 200 yards from his home where he was staying. George Zimmerman had discontinued the pursuit after the dispatcher asked him not to. He said, okay. Then he told him he was turning around to meet the officers coming back to the entrance, and he was proceeding in that direction. Again, according to cell phone pings, it would appear Trayvon Martin doubled back to confront him for whatever reason, and that's when the incident ensued. So, yeah, so based on the forensic evidence, the testimony at the trial, there was no other conclusion I think anybody could come to other than the fact that he was not guilty and he had a right to self-defense. Say nothing in the witness statements who saw him, two disinterested witnesses, who said they saw Trayvon Martin straddling George Zimmerman and pounding him martial arts style and slamming his head into the pavement. So, I mean,
okay,
I don't know what it would take. He did not invoke the stand your ground defense because that wasn't even an issue raised in the trial. His team invoked a simple affirmation of self-defense. It was not stand your ground. It had nothing to do with it whatsoever legally.
Okay, Sarge, okay, you know.
He was killed, one more thing, he was killed with a Kel-Tec PF9. 9mm pistol, one shot, wasn't killed with a 44 Magnum.
Okay, it's because from what I understand, yeah, go ahead, Brother Check. This is right off your angle there. Okay, Brother Check, because you possess a degree in criminal law.
Okay, so what proof do you have that Trayvon Martin doubled back? You said there was forensic evidence such as what?
Hair, cell phone ping. The cell phone pings that you use, you know, when you use a cell phone, your cell phone is tracked. It's tracked by cell phone towers in the vicinity. You can tell by the pings from the cell phone what direction you're moving in. That's how they got the people on January 6th. They could track the movement by the cell phone, and you can by the pings on George Zimmerman's phone and the pings on Trayvon Martin's phone. You can see what their movements were. Zimmerman lost sight of him. Remember, he told the dispatcher, I don't know where he is, but I'm going to try to see if I can find him. The dispatcher said, no, we don't need for you to do that. And he said, okay. And he said, I'm going to go back to meet the responding officers that I have summoned to check out Trayvon Martin. And he was going back toward the entrance to the community. It was then that Trayvon doubled back on him. Remember, he had that conversation with Diamond Eugene, not Rachel Chantel. It was Diamond Eugene.
Okay.
And in that conversation, he said he was being dissed by a creepy-ass cracker. I think he was being young and full of testosterone. He wanted to teach the creepy-ass cracker a lesson.
I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah, I got to ask a question. So why was Zimmerman following him in the first place?
No, Trayvon wasn't following him. George Zimmerman was following him.
No, that's what I'm saying. Why was Zimmerman following him in the first place?
Oh, that's easy. Easy to answer. I can answer that. Remember, I studied this case extensively. I mean, I've been hours on this case.
Okay.
And first of all, you got to understand that George Zimmerman was trained as a neighborhood watch captain by the Sanford Police Department. They had like a 10-day training program or something like that, somewhere in that vicinity of time. And they trained him as a neighborhood watch. They trained him what sort of activity to look out for when you're determining whether or not a person needs to be brought to the attention of the police. And there was a in fact a mini crime wave of burglaries going on in Sanford. Okay? And one of them, one of the victims of this mini crime wave was George Zimmerman himself, who had a bicycle stolen from his front porch.
Okay,
so he was very concerned about what's going on in Sanford, and he wanted to do what he could to stop it. That was the reason he was involved.
Let me interject. Okay, hold on, Sarge. Let me interject one second. Okay, so you're saying that Zimmerman himself had had personal property missing, but he don't know who took it, right?
No,
okay, see, now this is sounding like
And they got away from him because he was too far away from him to catch him. He saw him as he was taking the bicycle from his porch.
Okay. But he could not identify Trayvon Martin as
he didn't think Trayvon Martin was one of them. No. He was concerned about burglary in his neighborhood. He didn't think Trayvon Martin had anything to do with it. He could have had it, I suppose, but he was more concerned generally with crime happening in the community.
Okay.
Zimmerman said, "It's recorded saying on the phone, they always get away."
Well, yes, that's what he believed. He believed that they always get away. They're always getting away with stuff. We don't catch them. That was his opinion.
Who was
burglars? Burglars who do the crimes. The burglars.
Trayvon Martin. Perceived as a burglar.
Let me explain that one because he described behavior that he believed. Now, look, you don't always have to be right when you report things to police because, after all, a lot of times, being a former policeman myself, I know how wrong witnesses can be. But he said he observed behavior that he believed was furtive, suspicious, and characteristic of someone casing a place for a crime. That's what he believed, rightly or wrongly.
But he believed it, but he didn't have no probable cause. He had no evidence.
You don't have to have probable cause to report suspicious behavior to the police. There's no necessity for that.
So reasonable suspicion. So he had reasonable suspicion to suspect Trayvon Martin of being a burglar in the neighborhood.
I think it was reasonable based on what he said he observed.
Based off of what parameters?
Based upon the movement in and out of doorways, because I think when Trayvon Martin first thought he was being observed by George Zimmerman, he started to change his behavior. Now, that could be understandable because he thought maybe George Zimmerman was going to do him some harm. Trayvon Martin could have thought that too. Nonetheless, he did do those behaviors. He turned his back and was going in and out of several driveways, coming back out, going into others, going in other places. As far as George Zimmerman was concerned, again, rightly or wrongly, he believed the behavior warranted an investigation by the police, which is why he called them to do so. He wasn't going to try to arrest them by himself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let me ask you this question.
What are they always telling us these days? If you see something, say something.
Yeah, that's the
perfect. Okay, now, and keep in mind they thought that Trayvon had a weapon, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Brother Che, because, you know, you're younger than me, man, your memory is more better than me, you know, with me being at this age group, man, you know, been shell-shocked too much time for all the history that I've lived through. Okay, but Trayvon was on his way to see one of his parents, and I don't know if he was traveling. I cannot recall if he was traveling, like, from his mother's house, going to his dad's house, okay? But he had this altercation with Zimmerman. Zimmerman killed him. Now, I do know in California law is that he would have had to fall for at least murder two, okay, which is involuntary manslaughter. Now, I see we got a caller here out of area code 919. The last four is 9527. They have their hand up. I think I might know who this is.
There's one thing that's very revealing you need to hear about why he was with his father at that time and not with his where he had been living before. It's very relevant.
Okay, all right, hold that thought. Okay, hold that thought, Sarge. Okay, we're welcoming in every code 919. The last four is 9527. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Hello, this is Vincent. You were on my show yesterday from Durham, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay, and your name is Amos, correct?
No, Vincent.
Oh, Vincent. Okay, Mr. Vincent. Yeah.
Hey, Vince.
Okay, yes, sir.
Sarge.
Yeah, we got Sarge here, man. We got Sarge, you know what I'm saying? We also got the co-host and co-producer of our show, Brother Che and Chroma, you know, who holds a four-year degree in law. And we currently were talking about the Trayvon Martin situation. Tonight, the title of tonight's episode is that we are still in a state of emergency, you know, after the situation with Mr. Nichols there in Memphis, Tennessee. Austin, I believe I was trying to say on your podcast yesterday, please have Piaki call in if you got his phone number. And if Piaki does not call in, we know why, don't we, Brother Jack?
Yep.
All right, come on. Now, okay, you got Brother Piaki's flag now. He ain't scared of nothing, believe me. Trust me on that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I appreciate Mr. Vincent. Yeah, okay, Mr. Vincent, what's on your mind, sir?
Oh, I was just listening to last 10 minutes of the conversation, you know. And,
yes, sir.
You know, we've been hearing this stuff for years now, and you know, we all have come up with an opinion about it, and a lot of the story that has happened. A lot of us like to jump to conclusions when we hear these type of stories, and we don't wait till the evidence comes out. Because I remember when Alton Sterling and all that stuff was happening in 2016, you know, I told folks on my Facebook page, I said, you know what, I'm going to wait for the evidence to come out before I make a judgment on this. And they were like, well, you know, if it was a white person, they would have done it like this. And I'm like, you don't know that. You know, you don't know if it was a white person, they would have done it differently. You really don't know that because you have no precedent to really show that if a white person had done it, they would have done things differently. And a lot of times people will go back into the 50s and the 60s and they'll talk about the atrocities then, but I'm talking about things that are fairly recent, you know, like within the past 10 to 20 years or
okay.
30 years, you know, and a lot of times people, you know, and to me, like I say on my show, I'm not a race man. I don't care about what your race is and everything. All I care about is the truth. And, you know, a lot of times we just jump to conclusions and say, oh, this is what happened. You know, oh, you know, if it was a white person, they would have done this different. And I don't see it that way. I really don't, you know, based on my experience.
Okay, now let me ask you this here, Mr. Vincent.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay. Vincent, yeah, go ahead, Brother
Chet. Do you believe in racism and white supremacy? And if so, do you believe that you're a victim of it? If no, then who is in control of everything? And if no, what power do you have?
My thing is, I don't think supremacy is a problem. I don't believe in systemic racism. As far as me being a victim of white supremacy, no. In my everyday living, and I'll be 65 in October. From the time I was born in 1968 till now, you know, I can't go say that any negative incident that has happened to me, it has been because of white racism. I've had white people call me the N-word, but having said that, I've had a lot more black people call me the N-word to the point where I've done lost count. So,
I'm just telling you. Okay.
Honestly, right. we do realize that racism, white supremacy is not just prejudice. It's prejudice with institutional power. So you said that more black people have called you the N-word than the law allows. But what power do they have over you? None. The white people that's calling you the N-word, they can control where you go to school at, where you live at, where you put a business at. If they allow you to put a business in the first place, they can control your livelihood. So which one is more detrimental? Being called the N-word by people that look like you, or being called the N-word by people that look opposite of you and can control your daily life, where you can go to school, where you can go to work, where you can go start a business, where you could send your kids to school.
You know,
Vincent, are you still there, sir?
I'm sorry. I'm on your program. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. It's all good, man. You know, you'd be treated with. Yes, sir. Go ahead and answer Brother Chase's question, please. Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Now, I can't speak to anybody else's experience. I will say that. But I can't look at myself and say, hey, I live where I live now because the white folk won't let me live in a certain area, or I'm going to school in a certain place. Because I grew up in Prince George's County area of Maryland, right outside Washington, D.C. And the schools I went to were half black and half white. And in those schools, and you're talking about the person who started first grade in 1974, you know, graduated in 1986. So I can point to and say, you know, white people kept from doing anything.
So systematic racism has not anything is what you're saying.
I can't see it.
So you are able to live where you wanted to live. You were able to go to school wherever you wanted to go to school. You were able to get a job wherever you wanted to get a job. And you were able to live wherever you wanted to live.
If I qualified for, you know, a job or whatever, nothing hindered me, you know. I mean, there are times where you can say, oh, I want to live in this area. But due to economics or whatever, you can't live there. But I can't point to racism and say, oh, it's because the racist white folks didn't want me to live there. I find that hard.
Where redlining? Do you know the history of redlining in this country?
I understand redlining. I understand that. But that's, to me, redlining is not as big a problem today as it was back in the 50s and the 60s, say.
It never ended, sir. It's just like slavery.
So slavery ended.
Black people are still getting the least amount of loans for houses in this country.
Well,
we don't have no GI Bill. We didn't get no GI Bill. We didn't get no Homestead Act. We didn't get any of that stuff. So how is systematic racism not affecting your day-to-day life? That's what I'm trying to understand.
It's just not. It really isn't. And by the way, I live in Durham, but they have a lot of black-owned financial institutions.
They have
been denied institutions. So we can't just say, oh, you know, this is white supremacy. They've been denied loans. No, because there are black people who qualify for loans. We got black millionaires. We got black billionaires. I mean, stopping.
Sir, a thousand millionaires compared to 40 million millionaires is not equal in the playing field at all. a couple of billionaires. That's not even what the playing field is. So you're literally picking out little examples out of your life to say that, well, it didn't affect me personally, so it doesn't exist. But everybody around you is being affected by it. So I'm just trying to understand how systematic racism and white supremacy is not affecting your day-to-day life. And I'd be yet to get a straight answer from you. So.
Because I was trying to be kiss up the white people like you know in the past. All I know my experience. I know what I've gone through. And I know that my life has not been affected by white supremacy.
So you can live wherever you want to live.
My
I'm pretty sure I could. I'm pretty sure I could.
It's not a pretty sure. It's either a yes or no. Like, have you ever been turned down for a job because you were black? Have you been fired because you were black? We are the last hired, first fired.
Where's the evidence for that? Okay. Because I've seen white people get fired too. I've seen them get picked up at the bottom of the list.
All you have to do is Google it. Like, there's all kinds of studies out there that show this, that prove this, that have proved this, that have proved that white people that have a criminal record have a better chance of getting a job than somebody that's
right. California is known for it. Yeah. California is known for it. And, you know, not, you know, stepping on nobody, you know what I'm saying? I just want to get this is. But I myself, you know, have been the victim of racism. You know, like I said, when I was 19 years old, standing on the corner of Hollywood Boulevard and Western Avenue, and I got pulled over by the Hollywood Division of the LAPD. They had no probable cause. They put a 9mm to the back of my head, and the sentence said to me, "Was nigga, you move 1 inch, we'll blow your brains out from here to Imperial Highway." Hey, man, do you know how far Imperial Highway is from Hollywood Boulevard in LA? You know how far that is? Is every bit, man. I'm just asking general questions. It's at least 10 miles, okay? And then keep in mind, that's not a good feeling, you know, when they have no probable cause pulling you over. They could always lie and say you fit the description of, just like with Zimmerman, you know. Now Sarge, you know, he came here and Sarge, you know, made a logical statement and things of that nature right there. But unless Mr. Martin was like breaking in somebody's house or breaking in somebody's vehicle, he should not have been approached. If that man was just going there traveling from point A to point B, he should have been able to do that unmolested. You see, this is the thing that we emphasize right here there, Mr. Benson. You see what I'm saying? This is the thing that I'm trying to get you to understand too, Sarge. You see what I'm saying? And they ain't going to ask you what your genetic code is from Skyland or whatever. They're looking at that one that's managed from Cameroon, Nigeria, Ghana, South Africa. You see what I'm saying? Angola and what at? And Mauritania. Suspect is described as a male Negro, period.
The only reason I brought that up at all yesterday was to show the fact that, you know, human populations, for whatever reason, whether it's conquest, whether it's migration, whether it's warfare, whether it's famine or whatever, they intermingle and they mix. This is the characteristic of human interaction throughout human history. That's all. That's the reason I brought it up. Not to celebrate it, not say I'm proud of it or anything. No, to illustrate how universal it is. Now, let me go back to what I want to make this point about Trayvon Martin, because I think this in part might help you to understand what was at stake and what the total contextual picture is. There was a reason why he wasn't staying where he was formerly staying, either with his grandmother or his mother, Sybil. Here's the reason. Mm-hmm. He had been suspended from school. He was suspended from school three times. He was suspended for being caught with a marijuana pipe and a baggie with drug residue inside and on both. He was kicked out of school in the previous October for graffiti after he's caught with burglary tools and a bag full of women's jewelry that was identified as being stolen in a burglary in a police report, and a Sanford School District police officer filed a report on it and sent it up to the school administration for adjudication. He didn't get punished for that because he said he was holding it for a friend. So they didn't punish him for it, but the jewelry was positively identified by the victim, and it was mentioned in the previous burglary in a Sanford Police Department report. He was also suspended for skipping school and tardiness. And then they said he was a victim of a smear campaign when you report these factual matters. So, again, this is all has to do with the context of it. Now, of course, George Zimmerman didn't know anything about that, so I'm not saying that he did. George Zimmerman didn't know anything about what I just said. But it does go to show you that it is at least conceivable that Trayvon Martin may have been involved in maybe either casing somebody or somebody else whom he's a confederate of or for doing it himself. It's not inconceivable, and it's not out of the question. And another thing about that, too. You know, look, I mean, you know, there was so much demagoguery, and, you know, you're just not allowed to say certain things. Doesn't matter if they're factual or true. You can't say it because now you're supposed to emote and grieve. Well, I'm sorry, but this young man, like a lot of young men like me, I was probably as crazy and stupid as he was when I was his age. You know, the testosterone's flowing. You don't think clearly. You stupid thing. I'm lucky to be alive now, all the damn fool things I did when I was that age. But he did one thing, I believe. This is my belief. He did something that resulted in him dying. It was just unlucky for him.
What's that?
Like, it was lucky for me that I didn't. Okay? That's why teenagers need a man in their life to keep them straight.
It seems like you're trying to justify his murder. He just said that you
It wasn't
it
a murder, sir. It was justifiable killing.
It wasn't murder, sir. He was acquitted, sir. It was still murder. He still killed somebody.
It wasn't murder, sir. I don't believe that.
At the end of the day, he still killed somebody. It doesn't matter what you believe. That's the truth. He killed somebody. If that's true, then
you don't have a right to kill in self-defense.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, if it's true that killing is always murder, then you can't kill anybody in self-defense. You got no right to do it. Just die. Just accept dying and be done with it. No, you have a right, every human being. Adolf Hitler sitting in a jail cell waiting to be executed rightly for all the horrific crimes that he did would have a right of self-defense against someone coming in there, his jail cell, to kill him before he goes to the hangman's gallows. You understand what I'm saying? Everybody, you never give up your right to lawful self-defense, ever.
You're literally trying to justify
his
murder.
Never give up your right to lawful self-defense.
Just say that you're trying to justify his murder, sir. Just be honest.
That's what you believe. I do not. I will never agree with that based on the evidence I saw in this case. I will never agree it was murder. Now, if you have new evidence to show me, if you have new evidence to show me that could cause me to change my mind, I'd be happy to.
Stop. So you are saying on this program, on our program, that the murder of Trayvon Martin was justified. Yes or no?
I would say it in any venue that the killing of Trayvon Martin was lawful self-defense.
The killing of Trayvon
Martin.
Yeah, I got to play the Twilight Zone music. He wasn't even a law enforcement officer, so how is that lawful defense?
Because no one abrogates their right to self-defense in the face of a threat, imminent, deadly threat to life or serious physical harm. No one, including someone who is a neighborhood watch officer who's called the police and has some kid who's got a grudge against him coming back to take him out.
This is all
That's why he can do it. He can do it because you always have a lawful right of self-defense. To include using the right of deadly force to protect yourself. Always. Never is it taken from you. It's an inalienable right as a human being.
Okay, now let me ask you a question there, Sarge. I just caught you in one there. So what you're saying with that there, Sarge, is that when Reagan signed the Mumford Act in California in 1968, he in fact violated the law. Is because Dr. Huey Percy Newton had stated in point number 7 of the program that we want an immediate end to police brutality and the murder of unarmed and the murder of black people. So what you just did, Sarge, you just confirmed my point about Ronald Reagan. In the state of California, what it was is that white America did not want to see armed black men defending themselves against police murders. The Oakland Police Department was notorious for it. When you look at the case of Geronimo Pratt, the shootout they had in Los Angeles there in 1967, and that shootout led to these guys in L.A., the LAPD, who I refer to as the lapdogs, okay, LAPDOGS, that's them, right? They're the ones that invented SWAT. And then there was a young attorney at that time that followed their case and got all those men acquitted. And white America hates his name, although he's gone now. His name was Johnny Cochran, okay? Now, another thing, Los Angeles, the O.J. Simpson case. Okay, everybody wanted O.J.'s head. O.J. killed her. O.J. killed her. I don't believe O.J. did it. It's because Johnny Cochran had stated in his opening statement in L.A. County down at the criminal courts building, and I've been there a few times myself, but we ain't going to talk about that. Okay, he says that in his opening statement that we got witnesses here that saw 4 assailants running away from the murder scene, which was at on Bundy Avenue in West L.A., which is the city of Los Angeles, and one of the individuals running was being carried by another one. Okay, so then Ron Goldman, according to the autopsy report out of the L.A. County Coroner's Office, stated that Mr. Goldman's hands were battered like he had been in a fight, so the dude is fighting for his life. Okay, O.J. Simpson had bad knees, you see what I mean? Okay, and O.J. Simpson couldn't have done it, okay, and whatnot. So therefore, you know, what do you got to say about that, Sarge? And I'm going to use your mic on that. Thank you, Brother K.
Hey, brother, you put a lot on my plate, but let me start off with Ronald Reagan, okay? Look, for the most part, I got to admit, I do admire Ronald Reagan as President of the United States, but when he signed that law, I'm against anybody infringing on the right to keep and bear arms, the Second Amendment. I did not agree with him signing that law. I think it was bad. He should not have done it. But you notice the law is not race-specific. It is not race-specific. It applies to all citizens, whether or not it is equally applied, because, again, human beings, sometimes they're mendacious, sometimes they're evil, sometimes they're corrupt, sometimes they're venal, sometimes they're vindictive. But the law itself applies to all citizens and all persons in California. So it's not race specific. And now next, when you talk about cases, individual cases of self-defense, look, I look at every single case. I don't care what it is. When you're coming, when it comes up for adjudication, when it goes before a trial court where there is an adversarial proceeding, I look at every single case individually. What is the law? What are the circumstances? What are the facts? What do the witnesses say? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I would have to know what are the specifics, what are the charges, and unless I'm familiar with them, I cannot make a comment on them other than to say that everyone brought before the bar of justice prior to a conviction is deemed to be innocent.
Okay. Okay, the only thing I can say about that is that in the state of California, man, as you know, in Los Angeles County, they have a 94% conviction rate. It's because what L.A. County is famous for, and I think the same county that Cop Mala was the district attorney in San Francisco, they will overcharge you on a case, okay, to get you to plea bargain, you know, to a misdemeanor. Okay, and I know somebody, you know, who that actually, I know quite a few people that happened to. Okay, because you cannot afford a lawyer. The prison deliverers that we call the public defenders, they're only there in the public defender's offices because they're doing this as a crime and to get their law degree. They don't have your interest at heart. The county of Los Angeles tainted that case against O.J. Simpson, and I'm going to tell you who you got to thank for. The one and only former LAPD crash officer, Mark Furman. And what did he say there, Brother Che, that you and I had discussed, is that you take five niggas, you beat the first nigga real bad. You beat the second nigga worse than you did the first nigga. You beat the third nigga worse than you did the second nigga. You beat the fourth nigga, you know, real bad. He's going to tell you what you want, and the fifth nigga is going to sit up there and confirm what the fourth nigga told you. Yeah, that sounds like policing in Los Angeles, all right.
Now, you know I'm not even going to say, now, I got to kind of agree with you on some of this now. Now, you got it. I'm going to be honest with you. I've seen it. Not quite as bad as you say it, because L.A., we know about Ramparts, and we know about one in the Rampart scandal, and we know about one with a whole bunch of scandals in LAPD. So LAPD has a problem with corruption.
Yeah.
They still ain't cleaned up yet, so I get that. And I definitely will agree with you, state's attorneys overcharging, particularly when they got a three-time loser sitting in front of them. You know he's guilty, but they're overcharging to get the plea bonds and dispose of the case. It's not right. I know they do it. But most of the time when they do that, they're doing that with a guy who's gone up the river so many times, he knows he can't afford to get busted on another charge because he's going to get a Class X charge. He's going to be doing double and triple extra time. That's why it happened. I didn't say it was right. It ain't right, but that's the reason it goes down. So, but again, this is why you're supposed to ask for a jury trial. Stop taking plea bargains. You know, most juries, you can find one or two people on a jury who are going to hang the jury. Or he might even acquit you outright. So, you know, I mean, the system may be overloaded if they didn't take all these plea bargains.
Right. Mm-hmm. But
we got some agreement there, sir. I'm not going to say you're completely wrong on that now.
Okay. All right. What do we want to do here, sir, since we're in our last 17 minutes? Of this show here, Brother Che. And then, of course, Brother Che, you know, we got an appointment over at another podcast, you know, that we're definitely, you know, going to touch bases on. But I just want to read some comments here in the chat room. Okay, we got the wise-asser parents where he states that racial mixing is ultimately degrades the DNA. Sarge is always speculating, okay? The same person says in regard to you, Sarge. Sarge is the great speculator. The same person says that Sarge has a slave complex. This other person says here, the same person is laughing out loud. Then the same person, which is be wise ass sir, or be wise ass serpent, if I'm making it out, but it's spelled BEWISEASSERPENTS. And it says the word Sarge means slave serf. Sarge hates himself. The military only taught him to hate himself. Now, this ain't me talking about you, Sarge. I'm just going by what's happening in our chat room. Okay. And this is why I'm telling you who it is. That he's referring to you as a dumbass, laughing out loud, okay. Then the same individual says, Sarge never accomplished anything in his entire life, absent Uncle Sam holding his hand. The same person says, recognize he is a product of government pocketswords. These are not our words, Sarge. This is what we're getting in the chat room in regard to. And then this person says,
be very suspicious of anyone who spends all of his time and most of his comments criticizing a personality rather than dealing with what the personality said, particularly when you're talking about issues of great public import. Now, you ought to really be suspicious of anybody like that. That is the tactic of the demagogue. And I think you're witnessing it there right now.
Okay, Sarge, I'm just relating to you.
That's fine.
He's just telling
his opinion about me, and I'm putting it out there publicly. He has his opinion about me. He's wrong. I don't know how mixing DNA has anything to do with degrading DNA, unless you believe some kinds of DNA are inferior, and we have a name for that kind of belief now, don't we? We have a name for people who believe that human genetics is a normal human genetics. I'm not talking about genetics that lead to diseases and things like sickle cell or polio or whatever, Crohn's disease or whatever. I'm talking about normal genetics. And there is no human genetics that are inferior. So to mix them does not create inferior beings or degrade their DNA. Nazism, racism, whatever. But I thought we had abandoned those beliefs long ago.
No.
Okay, Sarge. Go ahead, Brother Chair. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's Brother Chair, co-host.
So
you know,
just like slavery hasn't been abandoned. Just like race, death hasn't been abandoned. Just like social commodification of human beings has not been abandoned. It's still in full effect, Sarge. I don't even know where to go with this because you don't even admit that you're a victim of racism and white supremacy. The person in the chat saying that's a bunch of malarkey. But I would really like to know how you can still say that you are not a victim of racism and white supremacy. It must have been Vincent.
No, I was once upon. I have been a victim of white supremacy and racism. I endured it in the beatings on my little young body. My neighborhood was racially integrating in Roseland Heights in Chicago. I lived in Roseland Heights in Chicago.
Oh,
Roseland was across the Crossway Bridge. When I went over there to buy the things, because they weren't drugstores, they had the comic books and little balsa wood gliders and the other stuff, water pistols that I wanted to buy. I had to go across the expressway in Chicago, 99th Street, Dan Ryan Expressway, to get into the neighborhood that was mainly Lithuanian, German, and Polish. And when I go across there, gangs of white boys that jump on me and start beating me up, and I had to eventually stop going by myself. I'd come over with my homeboys, and we'd have to go back there and battle our way all the way to the store and back. We called it flying a mission. Because one of my friends had been a Tuskegee Airman, and they used to escort these bombers on the raids in Germany, and they had to run a gauntlet of fighter and flak attack all the way there and back. Well, we called it flying a mission, because we'd regularly get into fights with gangs of white boys going to and from. So nobody's got to tell me about racism. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, I used to go down south. I see the white and solar drinking fountains. My family warned me about Emmett Till. They told me, look, boy, don't you say nothing stupid to these white women down there. You're going to wind up like Emmett Till. So nobody's going to tell me about white supremacy, what I need to know. I know all about it. I experienced it firsthand. I am no longer a victim of white supremacy. That has not happened to me. I don't believe. I have not had a personal experience of white supremacy and racism that unduly affected my life since maybe 1974. But I know it still exists, despite the fact that it hasn't affected me. So I'm not the issue. I know that racism still exists, even though I don't feel I'm unduly affected by it personally. So everything shouldn't be about the individual. It's about the issue.
No, it should be about the collective. The collective of our people are victims of racism and white supremacy, though.
I understand that, but I'm simply saying that whether or not I am a victim would not mean it either exists or it doesn't exist. Does racism affect black people unduly? Yes, it does. Is there still some people who believe in white supremacy? Yes, there are. Is white supremacy in any way, in shape, form, or fashion inculcated and instilled in the society, politics, and its culture in the manner that it was in the past? Absolutely not.
Absolutely.
Well, Sarge, it's pretty much. It's resurfacing, Sarge, because I think you and I and Vincent are in the same age group, okay? And those generations
after
me. I'm a
Vietnam veteran, remember? And I had an auto repair shop, man. I employed 15 people with my army, but I had an auto repair shop.
Okay,
I was doing pretty good business, too. The reason I gave it up is I got sick of being regulated by all them inspectors and regulators in Chicago that were on the take. I got tired of all the corruption.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's Crook. Yeah, that's Crook County. Sounds like Crook County. Okay,
yeah. Crook County,
yeah.
Man,
I'm a little familiar with
I had a pretty
Crook.
Good business going.
Yeah.
And then when my buddy died,
yeah.
And my buddy died, he was a helicopter door gunner. We served together in the Army.
Oh, okay.
I think he got a brain tumor from Agent Orange because he was spraying Agent Orange. And when he died, I was really dispirited, and I sold the business to his nephew, and his nephew really made it take off. So I know how to run a business, too.
Okay, Sarge. Okay. But
you know, when you don't know anything about something, just smack your mouth like the dummy in the chat room.
No.
What do you expect? Demagogues are usually stupid. Well, not always. Demagogues are not always stupid, but sometimes they are, because they don't know anything. They just flap, 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 and run their gums without any knowledge.
Okay, well, he's crumb bumming on you pretty bad here, Sarge. You know,
he's
really
got a right to, he's got a right to his opinion. I believe everybody got a right to it. I do, including his opinion about me. Doesn't mean he right, and he sounds like a dummy.
Okay. Door gunner, this is what he's saying. This is his last comment. It just came across our timeline right here, Sarge.
Well,
door gunner,
my friend. I love
die.
Him like a brother. He
was
my brother, and I love this day. And it was one of the worst days of my life when he committed suicide as the brain tumor was getting to him. I kept telling him, man, look, you know, come call me, talk to somebody, don't get down. You know, your family still loves you, but it was getting to him. He couldn't stand anymore, and he just blew his brains out because he couldn't stand what was happening to him with the brain tumor. It was inoperable.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear that. Now, he says here, Sarge, in his last comment, he says, ask him what Ms. Inez said about me last week. And that's the last comment that I'm going to read there, Sarge, because he's naming somebody, and it sounded kind of like some personal business right here, you know, and I don't tread on
nobody's personal business. Yeah, I don't want to use the show for my personal business, man, you know, whatever beef I got. Whatever beef he got with Ms. Inez, he got to take that up with Ms. Inez, not me. I didn't make the comment about him.
Okay, all righty. So we're going to go on, let that individual
man,
go on.
Man, I'm not being held responsible for things I actually say.
Can I get in on this?
Yes, sir. Bob.
Yes, sir,
Vincent, you must certainly can.
What the person is doing in the chat room, and he'll probably jump on me when I say this too. Basically, he's using a tactic. He's trying to use character assassinations as intimidation. This is something I've been going through for 30-something years myself. You know, you get to speak in your mind. You get to speak in your experience. You try to explain people what you're all about, but they're like, oh, no. And they think they know you better than you know yourself. Because I've been called coon. I've been called sellout. I've been called Mr. Step It and Fetch It. Recently, I was called a black comfort dog for white conservatives and things like that. And I tried to explain to people because they think that white people put me up to have this opinion to say what I, you know, to say what I say. And I tell people I've not received one thin red dime from a white person to say what I say. I never consulted with a white person to say what I say. I'm mature enough. I am mature enough to understand the world that is going on around me and to take in my experience and use it to explain my position. But a lot of times you tell people this because this has gotten another guy. I was on his show a couple of months ago, and he asked me, well, why you do this? Why you do that? I explained it to him, and he still didn't get it, you know. And I'm like, people like that, there's no reason to really continue a conversation with them because they want to believe what they have been believing about you. What you can tell them the truth, you can show them the truth, but they're still going to believe the lie. And that's what I tell people. I tell them, hey, you know, they still say, oh, you talk like a white man. I don't get my advice from any white person. I have no, you know, when I do my program, I have no consultants, I have no producers. I do everything 100% by myself. But, you know, the white man is paying you to say this and everything. white man ain't paying me jack. And then someone came up to me and they said, Vincent, I want to pay you to do this. And hey, I'll be fine with it. You know, I'll be fine, you know, but I don't do this.
By the way, I got a confession I'd like to make, if I may. I got a confession I got to make to the brother, if I can. I don't want to interrupt you, sir, but I got to make this confession so it have some context. This is a confession, and I hope you don't think I'm a traitor or anything. But back before I went into the Army, I was enamored. I was fascinated by the Black Panther Party. I wanted to be a Black Panther, man. I loved the leather sheet. I loved the black berets. I loved the gall and the savoir faire and the cool, man. I thought the Panthers was it, man. I was in love with the fascist ethic and the neo-Marxist rhetoric, man. I was taken with the Panthers. I want to be a Panther so bad. But this was an intermediate step for me because I was on the way to becoming a member of the Nation of Islam. I read Message to the Black Man by Elijah Muhammad about 3 or 4 times. I believed in theories of Dr. Yacoub, mad scientist on the island of Patmos who grafted the white devil out of a black man to bedevil the black race. I believed all that. So you got to understand where I'm coming from. I would have been I was probably more extreme than you. I bet you, if you would have said the same kind of thing you said to me today when I was like 17, oh, hell yeah. I'd have been all with it. When you get information, other information that you think actually holds up better and stands up better, if you have a mind that's flexible, you'll change your mind. And I'm still waiting for more evidence to convince me that the course I'm on now is not as good or one that I should stay on as the course I was on, like when I was 17. I've yet to see it.
Okay. Yes, sir.
We're down to our last 2 minutes.
Okay, that's right. And plus that, Brother Che, yeah, you and I have another appointment on another podcast as well, too. Okay, so gentlemen, okay, you can go on there with your closing comments, okay, and then I'm going to go out with the outro, and then thank all our listeners for listening here to Shabbat's Black Experience Enhanced, okay, and our phone number to call in is 516-418-5996, and also, too, we're still waiting on you Biden supporters to quote Brother Che. Okay, and then this last insult here, and I would imagine this is to all of us American Negroes always making excuses for things that they do not have the capacity to comprehend. Wherever who you are making these comments, sir, or ma'am, or whatever, you're welcome to call in as well to this podcast, and our number is 516-418.
They're not going to call in.
Of course not. No, of course not, Vincent. Of
they're
course not. Because, see, we got some heat for them. See, we got some heat for them. And Brother Chad carried that, man. Yeah. Pull up our archives, man. Oh, yeah. We got some heat for it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay, so making my closing comment, then on to Brother Che, then on to Benson, and then on to Sarge. We'll let Sarge get the last word in. Okay, my closing comment is this right here. Okay, everyone, you know, has a right to live. As to quote a wise man, if it's born, it takes a breath of life, it has a right to live, okay? Including black folks here in America. We have a right to defend ourselves. We have a right to exist. And we have a right to survive. Okay, Brother Che.
We are in a state of emergency. Is anybody going to get us out of it but us? We are on life support at this point, black families. You might not be deep into politics, but politics is deep into you. And you might not think that you're a victim of racism, white supremacy. But if you don't understand racism, white supremacy, and what it is, and how it operates, everything that you think you understand will only confuse you. That was the great Lily Fuller Jr. And peace, love, light, reparations, black empowerment, and separation.
Always.
You got some separation.
Yes, sir.
Integration was the worst thing that could have happened to us. MLK realized it too late, and he said he might have integrated his people into a burning house. So, Thank you all for tuning in. We're in overtime now, so it's going to cut off any minute now.
Yes, sir. Okay, Vincent, your closing comments, sir, and then let the people know how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. I have a blog called Black by Color Only com. You're welcome to go there, check it out, and whatever. And I'd just like to say, for the fact that I'm a born-again Christian, I believe that we were all built in the image of God, be we black, white, red, whatever. We were all made in the image of God. And because of the sin nature of mankind in this earth, you know, we can't look at one race and say, well, we're superior to you or we're inferior to you. We are all born in the same sinful state, and we are all built, but yet and still we are still built in the image of God. So we have no reason to bear one race up above another. And you know, for those who don't understand my viewpoint or where I'm coming from, just try to get to know me and don't make character assassinations and ad hominem attacks against me unless you know the place that I am coming from. So, but that's all I got to say for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Vincent. All righty. Okay. And then in my closing argument, yeah, this is Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. We deal with the Black Experiment. I'm sorry, correction. We deal with the Black Experience from the beginning of time to 10 minutes ago, okay? It's because we were the original people. We gave the world the sciences. We gave them the concept of the navigation of around the world. They never want to give us credit for anything. And then, of course, we have to say is that those dudes out of Greece who liked it boys more so than women, they came down here, they stole all the knowledge. Read Professor George G. M. James about the stolen legacy. Also, too, in African societies, great emphasis is placed on procreation between man and woman. And ask Barack Obama when he went over there to Kenya, and the president of Kenya had to ask the president of the U.S. at that time to leave. And then when he was on Air Force One going into Ethiopia, the head of state of Ethiopia told him, says, well, Barack, we heard about your escapade down here in Kenya and Nairobi. Don't even bother landing here. So we appreciate all our callers and listeners, and we appreciate our haters too and whatnot. And it just simply means that we are going somewhere. So what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go into the out track right here, and we're going to play a song here by Tupac's auntie. We know who Tupac's auntie is, don't we, Brother Jay?
Yes, it's Father Shakur.
Yes, sir.
This is the 21st century, and we need to redefine revolution. This planet needs people's revolution, a humanist revolution. Revolution is not about bloodshed or about going to the mountains and fighting. We'll fight if we are forced to. But the fundamental goal of revolution must be peace. We need a revolution of the mind. Revolution of the heart. We need a revolution of the spirit. The power of people